This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI, PugetSound.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Oh, this is a really disappointing and actually kind of despicable story coming out of Milton, the gem of Pierce County, though maybe we ought to stop using that moniker for Milton, the gem of Pierce County, because I don't like what they're doing here. We'll give them some opportunities to fix this. Because it took Jack Chandler, he's 80 years old, took him about 10 years to finally get a 9/11 memorial built in the city. In this case, it's at Milton Community Park. And they're just about 4 months from the ribbon cutting ceremony. But the city is saying it has to come down.
We wanted to build a memorial to honor those who perished in 9/11. And we asked for a piece of steel from the World Trade Center. We wanted to place the 9/11 memorial next to the Veterans Memorial because it honors those who perished on 9/11 as well as the veterans who served our country.
So why would the city want to take this thing down, or at least a piece of it? Because according to the Tacoma News Tribune, who we spoke to in that clip, one activist in the community, one, complained. And the complaint she has is insane. This is a crazy complaint. She lives in Milton, the gem of Pierce County, but she's also apparently a council candidate. She has filed paperwork to run. Her name is Heather Pop. Make sure if you live in Milton that you know that name so you don't accidentally vote for her.
Say it again.
Heather Pop with three P's. P-O-P-P.
Oh, this is horrible.
Yes, it is.
How many silent P's are there?
One too many. She submitted a written complaint something like months ago. She doesn't like the artifact from the World Trade Center that's used in this piece. And she especially doesn't like the angel on top of it. She lives across the street from this memorial. And she told the Tacoma News Tribune that the angel is a religious symbol. It is a religious symbol. So, she stupidly claims, it's an inappropriate endorsement of religion by the government. Now, lots of people say stupid things like this, don't actually know what they're talking about. Lots of cities give in to stupid complaints like this, not understanding the Establishment Clause. But it wasn't even that part that bothered me the most. She wrote in an email to the Tacoma News Tribune, I did not think that including such a large artifact was the best way to memorialize the lives lost. It felt like something that glorified the violence that occurred on September 11th. So a memorial that has a piece of the building of the World Trade Center, like an actual piece of it, that glorifies the violence on 9/11, according to a woman who doesn't know what the word glorifies actually means, and or she's just a crazy, stupid person.
What does she think about Ground Zero?
That glorifies violence. We have to get rid of it.
Oh, no.
That's my assumption based on this email.
These people are crazy,
I'd love to
Jason.
Talk to her about... Did we reach out to her to try to get her on the show?
I've not reached out to her yet. No.
Even though I told you to do that earlier today in an email and you didn't do it?
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. You go look at your email.
I will look at my email right now.
You go look at your email. It's titled Milton, the Gem of Pierce County.
Show me a timestamp.
You go check your email. I definitely said that. I want to talk to her because her position here is insane. Her position here is absolutely insane. But worse, the city of Milton is telling the guy behind this, Jack Chandler, that he needs to remove the angel part of this statue, of this memorial, by July 1st, or the city will come in, remove it themselves, and then just throw it away. And Chandler says even if he was inclined to actually give in, he can't get it taken down by July 1st. He's not able to just flip a switch, and then all of a sudden all these people will come saying, oh, I'll do it for you for free. It takes some planning. Now, his lawyer notes that calling the angel a religious symbol doesn't really make sense. And he's right, because an angel doesn't denote a government endorsement of one particular religion over another. In fact, angels, if you were to look at it in a religious perspective, isn't just about Christianity. But this doesn't show any preference to a religion over another. It's on city land, yeah. But it's just an angel, which I don't even think counts as a religious symbol. It's displayed here, certainly, in a secular way. And plus, the lawyer points out, hey, dum-dums, the angel isn't meant to discuss religion. It's a reference to healthcare workers from 9/11 because, as the lawyer wrote, nurses and EMTs are commonly referred to as angels of mercy. And they played a large role in the heroic response to the 9/11 tragedy. The 3-foot-tall angel appears with other symbols of similar scale, including the New York City skyline. He's 100% correct. Here's Jack Chandler.
I have no idea what's going to happen. I know the angel's going to stay because the citizens of Edgewood, Fife, and Milton have supported this project all along. And they're not going to stand still to have the angel removed. She overlooks the memorial.
I hope he's right. I know some of you guys who live there have emailed me talking about this. Outraged, and you should be. But hey, Mayor, what's her name? Shanna Styron Cheryl or Cheryl? Cheryl, I think it is. Who I think has been on the show. We've definitely spoken to someone from Milton. Where in the world are you to push back? Why are you not getting involved? Why is it that the city is actually trying to take this down? Shame on you. Because one person complained? Because Heather Pop, who, by the way, did I write you an email asking you to invite her on the show?
Yes, you did.
Was it time-stamped?
It was.
Was it before or after you telling me I didn't send it to you?
It was before.
Well before, huh?
Well before.
How many hours before?
Six?
Why don't you do that math again?
Seven.
Well, you keep going. Yeah, exactly. One crazy person, in my opinion, complains. One activist says one thing and all of a sudden the city just gives in? What are you doing over there in Milton? What's going on? Does that mean if another person complains and says taking it down is an endorsement of religion or makes something equally stupid up as the original complaint, it's a standstill and so you won't be able to do anything? Is that how you operate there?
Gives us a place where people who visit the memorial can stop and say a silent prayer if they like. If not, they can continue to walk by. But it has no religious connotations whatsoever. I never thought in my wildest dreams that somebody would be objecting to an angel for a 9/11 memorial.
100%. 100%. I hope Jack Chandler stands strong. I hope they push back. I hope they sue to stop this. That the city would even think about taking this down is so disturbing to me. This is something that's taken 10 years to get up. It's got the support of neighboring cities that put funding into it. I think the Puyallup Tribe put in money. I know Fife put in money. What a slap in the face. And so I hope those of you who live in Milton don't let this go by. Push back. Say something. Call, email. If there's a meeting that you can show up to, show up and make sure you stand tall for them. This is absurd. You get me, Heather, on the line.
I'll get you Heather.
Heather Pop, with two P's at the end, but a P at the beginning. Too many P's. A
lot of P's, 1-0.
And I want to talk to the mayor, too. Put that on the list.
This is getting to be a long list. There was already three names in that email.
This is getting longer because I am done. This is absolutely absurd. I'm pissed off, and I need to yell at people. I'm going to use this show for good or bad, depending on your perspective, I suppose. This is outrageous to me. This is absolutely outrageous. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
Woke race baiter Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, the Democrat from Rhode Island, who loves to pat himself on the back for condemning systemic racism. You see, he's woke. He gets it. Dismantle systems of oppression. Turns out he has a membership to a reportedly all-white private beach club, and it would appear that he tried to hide it by transferring the membership over to his wife. He ended up getting confronted by a reporter from Go Local Providence. She just leans in because they've been following this story for a while. And he apparently in the past, when getting called out on it, he had made some promises to work on getting it more diverse. And he does not respond well to this line of questioning.
Expressed concerns about the membership of the all-white Bailey's Beach Club, said that you hoped it would become more diverse. Now, your family's been members. Your wife is one of the largest shareholders. Has there been any traction in that? Are there any minority members of the club now?
I think the people who are running the place are still working on that, and I'm sorry it hasn't happened yet.
Do you have concerns in 2021? I mean, obviously, it's been 4 years. You had remarks on the floor following the deaths of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd saying, you know, hoping to root out systemic racism in the country. Your thoughts on an elite, all-white, wealthy club, again, in this day and age? You know, should these clubs continue to exist?
It's a long tradition in Rhode Island, and there are many of them.
Segregation?
We just need to work our way through the issues. Thank you.
Oh. Yeah, you know, in Rhode Island, particularly at our fancy clubs, you have a long tradition of saying, no black people allowed. Are you a Jew? Get out, sir! We only let white Anglo-Saxon men in this club and our wives. If this were happening to a Republican, if Sheldon Whitehouse were a Republican, let us not even pretend that it wouldn't be a massive story. Don't even live in that world in which we pretend this wouldn't be a lead story for CNN. This is a dude who goes out of his way to celebrate how woke he is. He wants you to think he's a literal white knight that comes to the rescue. And this is a dude who for years, not only has been a member of the supposedly all-white club, and I say supposedly because apparently the spokesperson for Sheldon Whitehouse said, oh no, that's not true. And then they were like, oh yeah, do you have any details? No response. So let's throw that out there. This is a guy who's known about this issue and has stayed in the club. He stayed in the club. Now, if you want to say the issue is we just don't have that many black people or Latinos in Rhode Island, thus we don't really have that large of a pot to pick from to get them to join, I think that that would be a fair point. Rhode Island is one of the whitest states in the country. It's one of the whitest states in this country.
And it's tiny. Their population is
super tiny. And it's a private beach club. I'm assuming it's super expensive on top of that. And so it's probably coming from old money of Rhode Island, which probably doesn't have a lot of black or Latino or Asians or Jews or whatever it happens to be. If you want to lean on that, okay. But to say, oh, well, it's tradition. What? Why would you say that? Yeah, dumb, why would you say that?
That's as bad as, oh, I have a friend of color, so it's okay.
Yeah, I can't be a racist. This one time, I had a black roommate. I mean, we didn't get along, and I used to call security on him all the time. But I can't be racist. What are you
Never.
Talking about? This my best friend is friends with someone who's black, so I can't be racist. That's the equivalent here. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Democrats going on and on. We dismantle white supremacy, except at your private beach clubs. Except there. Lack of diversity at a police department shows you white supremacy. Lack of diversity at his all-white private beach club. That's not, it's tradition. Okay. Okay, Sheldon. Talk about white people. It's a white name. Sheldon Whitehouse. I mean, literally has white in the name. Oh, CNN, you guys covering? Oh, no, you don't want to cover it? Got it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the road?
So, you know how yesterday we said that the Washington State Patrol made an arrest in the items being thrown onto freeways?
Yeah, the people that were targeting me.
Yeah. So, they made a mistake. I didn't get a press release calling out the media for reporting their mistake this time. Just throw that out there. Go full circle. And I love my friends over at the Washington State Patrol, except for when they tried to throw me under the bus for a story that was correct, but they kind of screwed up. But we'll push that aside because I don't hold grudges ever.
Ever.
Just never. We just got a press release that said at approximately 3 a.m. on June 20th, the Washington State Patrol arrested someone for throwing rocks from I-5 towards vehicles on the exit to Dearborn Street. A sergeant was on foot in the area and observed an individual on a bike wearing a headlamp on the inside of the guardrail overlooking the exit. Does that kind of sound like a homeless person, by the way?
A little bit.
Just throwing one out there. The sergeant observed this individual throw two rocks at vehicles as they exited. A foot chase ensued as the subject rode his bike onto Dearborn. Washington State Patrol aircraft was patrolling the area as part of the effort to arrest the suspects that had been throwing rocks and look over following the suspect. The suspect ended up going out of sight in a plaza near Fifth Avenue in Weller. Okay, following me so far?
I'm with you.
He got away kind of out of sight. Just momentarily, though. As the troopers were searching in the area, a separate individual threw a large knife at a trooper's car and was subsequently arrested. So bad dude, bad guy, again, I'm wondering if it was a homeless person throwing a knife at the car. It was at this time that an individual rode by the scene with a headlamp closely matching the description of the suspect that was involved in the foot pursuit. The person was arrested for investigation of attempted assault for throwing rocks at vehicles. Troopers continued to investigate this incident, and late Monday night, video was obtained, and in reviewing, it was evident that this individual arrested was not the suspect that was throwing rocks. King County Jail and the prosecutor's office were immediately contacted. The subject was released early this morning. Just saying that if I get a press release for reporting what they said yesterday, I'm losing it. I will lose it. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, last week I did the story of an arrest. The suspect who was arrested was labeled as the main suspect in the theft of Officer Lexi Harris's vehicle after she got into that accident. Guy stole her car. There was an arrest made last Tuesday morning around 1 a.m. SPD confirmed this in multiple emails, including an email coming from the police chief, and I wrote about what the email said. Turns out that was a mistaken arrest. They sent out a press release that called me out, not by name, but the media outlet that did this. There was only one, for pushing out something that turned out to be false, but they wrote it in a way that made it sound like I just made the story up. They've since apologized publicly two times, both at a press conference and as an interview on the show. And I appreciate that, and all is forgiven, sort of.
Sort of.
Well, because I'm a very angry person who hangs on to things. And that is a me problem that I'm working on.
No, you're not.
I'm not working on it at all, but it is a me problem. I was right. This time, multiple media outlets reported this. Multiple. Does anyone get called out? Do I see a press release saying, hey, stupids, why would you report our mistake again? Nothing. Nothing. Uh-huh.
You know what's my favorite part about this? Is this news like just came across, you know, within like the last 15 minutes?
I read it live.
You've had no time to prep for this.
I skimmed it real quick while Sheldon Whitehouse was talking for 27 seconds. And I said, we're doing this next, because I'm a pro.
You would usually prep and get your words ready.
I read something first, and I'll sort of formulate what I want to say. Oh, on this, I know what I want to say. I better see a press release from the Washington State Patrol calling out Cairo and Como and King 5 and Q13 and the Times and everyone, except me, for reporting that story yesterday. I better see that press release.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, it's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Renton, because earlier today, about 10 a.m. or so this morning, Dale Constantine, the King County executive, held a press conference with the mayor of Renton, Armando Pavone, to announce that they just purchased the Extended Stay America Hotel in the city. They spent a little over $28 million on it, 28.6 to be exact. And in theory, it's supposed to take away the homeless folks from the Red Line Inn nearby, but that doesn't actually seem to be likely. This is more really to push that big picture strategy, the shift in strategy of getting homeless people inside, away from the congregate shelters. And instead, they get to be into a room where they can be alone. They actually get some privacy. No roommates, no shared spaces. It's effectively a studio apartment minus the kitchen. Now, the Seattle Times, citing no research, just simply says, as a matter of fact, this is better for homeless people's mental and physical health. Okay. I mean, I believe that. But they say it without citing any particular research. There is some research out there from the UW, not necessarily on this topic, but it's related to it. But they chose not to do that. Instead, they want you to believe that this is the right strategy. That's what this is about. They're pushing their perspective that this is how you can address homelessness. And they note that other activists believe that as well. They've been pushing for this model to stay. But the question I keep coming down to is actually a pretty simple question. Does this work? Is this successful? Because it's not just that King County is doing it, the city that we don't talk about during this segment, also putting tens of millions of dollars into this. King County, tens of millions of dollars into buying hotels. We've got a homeless regional authority that's been kind of AWOL. Their new director isn't speaking up much publicly. They have no clue what's going on there. They're not even a part of this. I know the plan from the county and from other activists, get people into hotels. Get them off the streets, get them into hotels. In fact, telling someone that they get a hotel will get them off the streets, because now a lot of homeless people will hold up on taking any resources, hoping for a hotel room. Okay, but then what? Seriously, then what? What happens once you get them inside of those hotels? I asked the data. I asked the county for the data. Haven't gotten it yet, and that's okay. I got an email about an hour ago that I haven't read yet because it seems long. And I'm going to look into it. But something tells me they don't have the data that they want you to think they have. Because if they had the data that this was, quote unquote, successful, they'd be touting that. So is there even any data showing that this idea in concept can work? Maybe there does exist data points to say that. I just feel like it would be more easily accessible if this was a successful program. Now, maybe it's too early to say whether or not it's successful. Okay, I think that's fair. I wouldn't spend $28 million or $26 million buying an entire hotel until you actually know that the program exists in a workable way. And maybe they haven't yet defined what success is. Or maybe they have, and normal people, reasonable people, have a slightly different viewpoint on what would be a success. Because for me, success as it relates to the homeless is, yeah, not just to get them off the streets, but get them into a permanent home within a reasonable amount of time. Give them the treatment that they need if they need it. Mental health care, addiction services, whatever it happens to be. Get them job skills that maybe they're lacking, that if they had, it would be easier for them to get a job. Whatever it is, then get them into permanent housing. To me, that's that is a reasonable goal. But then the question is, well, what is a reasonable amount of time to address this? And I think that is fair, because time in this case is subjective. And let's be clear. Someone who's only homeless due to bad luck, which activists like to pretend is the majority of people, okay, in theory, that's going to be treated differently than someone who has deep, deep, deep mental health issues or addiction problem. My presumption is the person who's just kind of on bad luck run, that person's going to be easier to get into permanent housing and to get a job. How long does that take? 2, 3, 4 months, maybe 5 months. Whatever it happens to be is going to be different than someone else. However, my fear here is that they are going to be in these hotels for years and years and years, or forever. And we're just building hotel rooms for people to come to the county to try to take advantage of. Because unless you have wraparound services and still a carrot and stick approach to get them to take this all seriously, you're just giving them a hotel room. You're giving them a vacation. To them, this is certainly a vacation. To most people, just giving them a free hotel room, even if you have to take care of everything else on your own, that's a vacation. So what are we doing at this point to get them out of a hotel? And that's the part that I'm most interested in. And again, full disclosure, I'm certainly open to the data that suggests they have that plan and it's working. I just want to see it. Up until this point, we haven't. Meanwhile, a fully grown chimpanzee ended up getting shot by Umatilla County deputies after it attacked a woman, according to the Tacoma News Tribune. It happened Sunday morning. It's not entirely clear why this ape decided to go ape.
Okay. Did you write that?
No, it came to me.
Really? That was bad. You should have just left it.
You know, why
wherever.
Don't you shut your stupid face and turn off your microphone?
All right, I will.
Thank you. 200 pounds. 200-pound ape attacked this woman. The woman was the 50-year-old daughter of the owner who's had it for like 17 years. And law enforcement knew about it, that she's lived with the ape for 17 years in this house. But for some reason, it attacked the daughter. It bit her in the torso, the arms, and her legs. And it was pretty dramatic. Here's just a portion of the 911 call.
Sending a deputy right now. Hang on 1 second. Okay, I'm trying to
send
this
more
up right
than
now.
One, because the ape, if the ape gets the drop on him, he's gone too.
Do you have pressure on the wound?
I'm trying to guard her from a 200-pound ape, so I can't really put pressure on it, ma'am.
They went into a room, and they were holding the door shut because the ape was trying to break in, which is just nuts to me. That's insane to me. They ended up escaping to a bedroom in the basement. Thank God she got cell phone coverage. I mean that seriously. I'm glad she was able to actually make that phone call. So deputies arrive. She's holding the door shut. They get there kind of knowing an ape is roaming around now, don't exactly know where it is. They find the ape in a fenced-off area just outside the house. But the problem is they couldn't get into the house because of the ape. They couldn't get to the woman and her daughter to help. And so, with permission from the owner, they ended up shooting and killing the ape. And that part of the permission granted from the owner, that's like, did you just quickly give it because you realized it was a menace? Did you look at your daughter who was injured and said, okay, we got to do what we got to do? Because in that instance, I at least appreciate it because usually, I mean, any pet, ape is obviously a little bit odd, but pets, you don't quickly say, oh yeah, put it down. That's a painstaking decision. So they shot it once and they killed it. Ugh, poor sheriff's deputies.
This whole story, Jason, is just bananas, and you know it.
Okay, that is not appropriate given the content of that story. This is a sad story. Stop monkeying around. It's not appropriate. That's not a pun because it's an ape, which is not a monkey. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM770 KTTH. Lots of potential issues heading into the reopening of the economy as you are getting back to work, as the state is reopening. We've got a lot of traffic issues that we're undoubtedly going to have to deal with. And who do we turn to in cases having to do with traffic? And my misery and my anger and anxiety is Chris Sullivan, our friend from Cairo Radio. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Well, geez, I had no idea I gave you such anxiety. Wow.
Well, the stories
I'll see what I can do.
The stories you cover give me anxiety. Let's start in Arlington, where there's going to be a significant closure that's going to impact a lot of people.
Yeah, southbound I-5 is going bye-bye. for the next 5 months in the Arlington area. They're just past Smoky Point, just at, past Highway 531. We have 30, that is. The Stillaguamish River Bridge is going to be taken out of commission early tomorrow morning, and it's going to be gone for 5 months. It's an 88-year-old steel truss bridge, and they've got to strip it down to the metal and then basically restore it as best they can. So if you're coming southbound trying to get into Arlington, you're going to be detoured into the northbound lanes of I-5 for the next 5 months. So this is going to have a huge impact.
What are the options here? It just feels kind of limited in mitigating the choke point.
Yeah, there aren't many, unfortunately, because of the way the sound kind of pinches in, and the way you've got Stanwood, Camano Island up to the north a little bit, and to the east, you really don't have many options other than Highway 9. And so what you're going to do, and what's interesting is back in 2014, they actually replaced the bridge deck on this same span. And what they did is they put in a concrete area through the median, both in front of the bridge and behind it, so on the north end and the south end, so that they could have people transition around the work zone. So fortunately, that's there already. So they're going to use that again. So people, as they approach the Stillaguamish Bridge from the north, are going to drive across the median, but it's concrete. It's concreted and laned, and you will drive onto the northbound lanes, and then once you're south of the bridge, you'll drive across the median again and get back onto the southbound lanes of the freeway. So I think tomorrow morning, if people haven't been paying attention, they'll probably be like, whoa, oh, okay, this is happening, and then you'll get used to it. But there just aren't a lot of options. What this is really going to do, Jason, probably is on the weekends in the summer. I mean, we've got beautiful weather now. Some would say too hot, but people, when
I would say
50,000 cars a day use that bridge during the summer. During most days, it's 35,000. So there's only going to be two lanes in each direction through the area. So everybody's losing a lane. You've got the transition plus the work as a distraction. So it has the possibility, especially on those weekend days, of causing some significant backups in the area. So you need to plan ahead.
Yeah. And I'm mostly concerned about the folks who aren't making commutes right now, but are getting ready to start their commute. I mean, when the state reopens officially, perhaps a week and a day from now, you know, a lot more people might be headed into the office, and the folks who have decided to live further and further away from some of the, you know, the problem areas of King County or Snohomish County, they're going to get hit by this and they're not going to realize it.
Yeah, and you know, there's some, you know, plenty of people who live in, you know, Mount Vernon and Burlington and, you know, up north, and then, you know, maybe commute to Marysville or to Everett. Maybe, you know, some workers who might be returning to, you know, white collar jobs at Boeing, for instance, at the plant. I hear they might be going back in some fashion in July. So yeah, there is a commute that comes from that far north and works its way down. I mean, even into Seattle and places beyond. I mean, I know some people that go from that area even further south to Seattle. So that's going to be something that they're going to need to be aware of. But believe me, once they do it once and they see the bridge being all wrapped up so that the debris doesn't get into the river, they're going to realize that this is a long-term construction project, and they'll get used to it. But yeah, coming back, you just need to be prepared that Stilly River Bridge is out of commission.
The other big issue that's going to impact a lot of people, it starts this weekend in Seattle on southbound I-5.
Yeah,
or
Revive
Friday,
I-5. Yeah, Friday night at about 7 o'clock, they're going to start shutting down the lanes on I-5 through the heart of Seattle. So basically coming underneath the convention center, starting Friday night at about 7 o'clock, all southbound drivers are going to be forced off at the exit to I-90 into what we call the collector distributor lanes. So, you know, where people can either go to I-90, they can go to Dearborn down to the stadiums, or that one lane continues south onto I-5 for people who say got on at James Street or whatnot. And so all southbound lanes are going to be trickled into that one lane all the way down to Spokane Street, basically the West Seattle Bridge, because they're in the process of doing some grinding and repaving work there between I-90 and Spokane Street. This is the first of 16 weekend closures over the next two summers where they're going to be in this configuration, where we're going to be down to basically just a trickle on southbound I-5, and you're going to want it another way around. You come from the north, 405, definitely 99 is an option, but you pay a dollar toll if you have good to go. So yeah, that
and
one's
of course
going
they don't get rid
mark.
of they don't get rid of the tolling
no
for this
no,
ever
no No, they not. Because, of course, they're tied to the bonds. And we need to get that money to pay off
the bonds. Yeah, but they were bonds that were supposed to be paid off by people who choose to take it because they want to. And this now they're effectively being forced.
Yeah, right. Now, if that's the way you choose to get around. But that would be an option. I'd just stay out of downtown as best I can.
What if you live in West Seattle?
We'll get to that. Well, I mean,
you're totally screwed at that point.
Right now. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, it's even worse right now for people in or out of coming in and out of West Seattle.
Yeah, because now you're going to be forced to use the 99 tunnel to get all the way through and pop back on, say, at Mercer if you're heading northbound. But for the people heading out of West Seattle, the southbound thing shouldn't be that big of a deal because they can head off a couple of different ways to the south.
Yeah.
But by the way, there's a Sounders match this Saturday at Lumen Field, correct? Good luck getting to the game because everybody and their cousin is going to be using that collector distributor that most people would take to get down to the stadium and or Pioneer Square, but that's where all the I-5 traffic is going. So, yeah, Sounders fans had better find a different way than they're used to getting to the game or leave a lot earlier, or they're going to find themselves missing the march or like that one day, you know, the goalie's going to have to run to the game because everything is shut down. So, yeah, prepare for that one, definitely.
Or just skip going on Saturday and go to the game tomorrow night because there's a home game tomorrow night.
So, but I mean, a weekend, it's going to be beautiful. You know, you want to get out there. Yeah. But, yeah, if that's your plan, your season ticket holder, whatever, plan ahead for that one especially because getting in and out of the stadium district this weekend is going to be incredibly more difficult than usual.
Yeah, I have a crazy question. I think I know how you're going to answer it. I'm going to yell at you if you answer it that way. But you've got two projects that have needed to be done for a while. Is there a reason they waited until the state reopened and people were out and about before tackling this instead of when there was no one driving at all and the impacts would have been much less felt?
You're going to yell at me because you know the answer. No, well, weather is a part of it, but a lot of this work is money dependent, right?
Uh-huh.
So when they set aside the money and the work that needs to be done, they've been working on this Revive I-5 project at night for the last month or so. So they've been doing the work, but they tried to choose out of the 16 weekends, there are only two where there aren't any events going on. So they picked their poison this weekend because there was a Sounders match, but the Mariners weren't in town as well. So, you know, you have a combo there. So it's hard to schedule something like this when, even if you weren't in a pandemic or even if you were coming back from a pandemic, because there's no good time to take the freeway out of operation. Now, there's enough distance
There was a good time to take them out of circulation, which was, you know, 6 months ago.
Well, it's true, but they've been doing a lot of work. It's just, you know, in sequence, you set the contracts out, you talk to your contractor, and they're like, okay, the work is going to begin in late August, early, you know, early May. Okay, now we're setting it to June. So, I mean, it's like setting out a Sounders schedule for you or, you know, a World Cup schedule a year in advance. It's like all of a sudden, just because there's a pandemic and the stadium opened, you can't just play all those games now, right? You got to plan ahead. The people have got to get there. The contractors need to be there. The supplies need to be there. They got to move their stuff into place. So as much as it would be, because that was one of the things I asked early on during the pandemic is, guys, there's nobody on the freeway. Let's go to town. Let's do what we need. You know, let's get going. And it just doesn't work out that way because of the way they set the contracts and the way the scheduling is set out, and unfortunately that's the answer that you don't want to hear. I know our listeners don't want to hear, but that's just the way these things operate.
Well, good luck, everybody. Make sure you do what you can in order to prepare for this. You got all the information you need over at mynorthwest.com/chokepoints. Chris Sullivan, thank you so much for stopping by. As always, really appreciate it.
Anytime, Jason. My pleasure.
You're listening to the Jason Rand Show.